Well, good morning once again. I am so grateful to be with you. Again, I'll introduce myself in case you came in just a couple minutes after. I'm Ryan Schmall. I'm the director of Grow Ministries here. I want to very quickly point you to a quick error that was completely my fault. I gave Scott the wrong passage. So if you're reading out of your bulletin and you see 1 Samuel, it actually should be 2 Samuel. You may notice my title of our sermon today is Unexplainable Joy, and the reason I really want to point this out is because if you read 1 Samuel in the verses that we gave you, it ends with God killing 70 people, and I'm pretty sure that would not be the sermon that I would attach this title to, but you never know. But I want to just make sure you are aware. We are actually in 2 Samuel today. It's been a long week. I've been away with high schoolers and doing all kinds of crazy stuff with them, so please forgive me there. Not Scott's fault, mine. So I don't know if I need to point this out, but I feel like I'm just going to. This has been a very difficult couple years. You too? A little bit of laughter, because we're all uncomfortable when we talk about this, because it's been hard. It's been hard in different ways for us. Each of us in our own unique lives have faced difficulty beyond understanding. Some of it COVID-related, some of it a plane crash, or the loss of a loved one, or losing friends. Then we add all of the realities of the pandemic on top of that. This has been a struggle. And as we come out on the other side of this reality for us, I can't help but look back on the way in which I misplaced or misaligned my own sense of joy over the past couple years. Perhaps you can identify with that reality as well. As a pandemic began last year, I remember feeling like, oh, I can handle this. I can do this. I got this. Maybe you felt the same way. 2 weeks, no big deal. But 2 weeks turned into 4 weeks, which turned into 6 weeks, which turned into what felt like an eternity. And my sanity began to slowly slip away. I was telling our students this past week that I managed to hold it together just about until after Christmas time. But hold it together is a very, that's a very loose term. I think there were already breaks happening along the way. Over the course of the past couple years, I felt the emptiness that I feel just in my own broken human condition, that hole that we try to fill with so many things to manufacture our own joy. I began stuffing it with all kinds of things. For me, one of the ways that this happens, my wife knows very, very well when I'm going through something like this, a moment where I'm trying to find joy, but I'm stuffing it with the wrong things, is when all the Amazon boxes begin showing up at the doorstep. She's like, what is that? And I'll take it very quickly into the back room. Nothing. Some of you have the opportunity to join me on Zoom classes during the week. And every now and then I will do it from my man cave, which my man cave is a boy cave because it's a lot of toys, a lot of superhero toys. And some of you may have noticed that the toy collection just kind of grew over COVID because I was just looking for anything and everything to fill that void, that emptiness, that lack of joy in my life because of what I was facing. I was averting my attention and thus misaligning myself with the truth that the joy was present there all along in spite of the circumstances that I was facing and we as a collective group were facing as well. But when we hit crisis, when we hit pain, when we hit these moments, we tend to go to things that ultimately just bring more emptiness and brokenness and a lack of fulfillment. This became increasingly clear one night when I found myself crying on the floor of my kitchen because of all of the feelings and emotions and realities of what had been going on in my own life, in my own soul, I remember going to the doctor, explaining, I was on the kitchen floor, I was crying, I was weeping. He said, Ryan, I think you had a panic attack. I said, that makes sense. Maybe you can identify with that kind of feeling over the past couple years. But I went home from the doctor, and I remember thinking, something is off. Something has got to shift within me. The joy that I speak about often, I couldn't feel it or see it at all. I had completely forgotten that I have a God who loves me deeply, who holds me in the midst of my pain and struggles and hurt and agony and says, you are loved, you belong, and you matter. Brothers and sisters, when we realize that and when we live into that truth wholeheartedly, the joy that we attempt so desperately to manufacture in this world is not something that you can manufacture. We can bring about temporary happiness and brief satisfaction, but joy, my friends, is something that only comes when we are aligned with the truth that God is with us and we rest in that. I'd love to invite you to open your Bible to 2 Samuel chapter 6. And we're going to kind of skip around here this morning. But starting in verse 1 through 5, and then we're going to head down to the second half of verse 12. I want to read you this story. Over the next couple weeks, we as a church are looking at the life of David and some of the unusual ways that he lived and related back to God. And today, I think it's a fascinating observation for us as we consider this passage in light of the past couple years and where we as people have placed our joy. And I want you to truly pay attention to the way David is acting and embracing life in this moment, because I think it's critical for us as we are pursuing God to enter into life with the same frame of mind. Starting in verse 1, David again brought together out of Israel chosen men, 30,000 in all. He and all his men set out from Bala of Judah to bring up from there the ark of God. Now, I want to pause for a moment in case you are unaware. The ark is a significant, significant thing within the Israelite tradition, which within the Jewish tradition. It is known as the place in which God dwells, and the ark had not been with the people. That is critical for us to understand here, that the ark had not been with the people. And so we meet David in this moment knowing that the ark is coming back in alignment with where it was meant to be the whole time. To bring the ark, which is called by the name of the Lord Almighty, who is enthroned between the cherubim that are on the ark. They set the ark of God on a new cart and brought it from the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill. Uzzah and Ahio, sons of Abinadab, were guiding the new cart with the ark of God on it. And Ahio was walking in front of it. David and the whole house of Israel were celebrating with all their might before the Lord, with songs and with harps, lyres, tambourines, sistrums, and cymbals. So we see this profound celebration because the ark is returning to its rightful place. And if we skip back down to the second half of verse 12, it says this. So David went down and brought up the ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. When those who were carrying the ark of the Lord had taken six steps, he sacrificed a bull and a fattened calf. David, wearing a linen ephod, danced before the Lord with all his might. While he and the entire house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouts and the sound of trumpets. As the ark of the Lord was entering the city of David, Michal, daughter of Saul, watched from a window. And when she saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, she despised him in her heart. When they brought the ark of the Lord and set it in its place inside the tent that David had pitched for it, and David sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings before the Lord. After he had finished sacrificing the burnt offerings and fellowship offerings, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord Almighty. Then he gave a loaf of bread, a cake of dates, and a cake of raisins to each person in the whole crowd of Israelites, both men and women, and all the people went to their homes. Essentially, as we read the unfolding of events in this passage, we see just a tremendous amount of celebration that they are throwing the biggest party possible, because this, brothers and sisters, is where the ark was supposed to be. Actually, if even though we weren't supposed to be looking in 1 Samuel, if you go back to 1 Samuel chapter 6, that's actually a moment in this story where the ark is in the possession of the Philistines. And the Philistines are being cursed by God because they have it, because it's not in its rightful place. And they know that, and they're trying to get rid of it because they're like, this is not where the ark is meant to be. The ark was this holy, divine space for God to dwell with the Israelites, with his people. But the alignment had been off. And David, understanding the history of his people and how this meant and what this meant for him and the Israelite people, it was a significant, deep-rooted reality that these things, the ark and the Israelites, must be in alignment together. If you look at how the ark is treated all throughout the Old Testament, God is continually giving very detailed instructions with what to do and what not to do, because it is such a significant and holy reality. And the times in which we see that those rules are broken, when the alignment is off, then we have things that happen in 1 Samuel chapter 6 where 70 people are killed. Because that is not how it was designed. From this story, we here in 2021, we can pull back and realize that there are some incredible truths for our own lives. The design of God with his people, first and foremost, is critical. In fact, if we go back all the way to the creation narrative, if we go all the way back to Genesis chapter 1 and 2, and we watch God designing this world and he creates humanity, one of the things that we must take note of in that story, within that narrative, is that God intentionally creates this to be in relationship with his people, with humanity. He does not design this world and drop humans out and say, all right, now go have fun. I'm going to take off. No, God, we actually see a personified individual within the Garden of Eden. We see God walking around because God is displaying to humanity that he is with us. And he always has been. And if we know the creation narrative, if we go all the way back, we know that we did not live within that created reality for long. Very quickly, we enter into a different frame of mind. Humans decide, you know what? That joy that we're created with, this beautiful world that God designed for you and for me, maybe it's not enough. And so we see man and woman break the laws. They break the design. They break the alignment of God and humanity. And they move out of that, trying to create their own joy, their own reality, their own story, their own narrative. And we all know the story. From that decision, from that point, brokenness enters the story. We choose a life of sinfulness and disobedience to God because we try desperately to create something that we think will bring some kind of fulfillment, when God the whole time has been saying, no, I've created this with you. I'm with you. I'm here. You don't need anything else. In the creation story, God creates anything and everything man and woman could need, desire, or want, and yet they still think that there's something more. And that pursuit of something more ultimately just brings more brokenness, more longing, more pain, and more suffering. If we think back to the past year and the way that we have felt this misalignment and we've been trying to fill the gap in our own lives, and maybe not even just the past couple years, but maybe even in the past week, maybe in the past 24 hours, or maybe over the past 20 years, you have been dealing with something where you have felt this hole, this gaping, missing thing within you. And you've been stuffing other things, trying to mend that brokenness. Continuing to misalign yourself with the truth that whatever the brokenness is, you have a God who is right next to you, embracing you, holding you in the midst of the times where you cannot hold yourself up. I love Alan's prayer this morning where he acknowledges this beautiful reality. Thank you, Alan, where sometimes we need help. That is true of each and every one of us, brothers and sisters. There is no shame in the reality that we need help because that is who we are as humans. You and I are not God. Thank God. We're not God. Sometimes I feel as though we create this sense in which we need to be, though. We can do it on our own. But brothers and sisters, you were never designed to do it on your own. In fact, you were designed to abandon yourself, to lean on the one who created you. There's this passage out of Luke chapter 9 I'd love to read to you. This is Luke chapter 9, verse 23. And this is Jesus speaking. He says, "If anyone would come after me, or if anyone would follow me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for me will save it. What good is it for a man to gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit his very self?" I want to read verse 24 again because I think it's so important for us to catch on to because it's backwards from the way we typically live our day-to-day life. "For whoever wants to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for me will save it." I won't ask for a show of hands, but how many of us have attempted to be the savior of our own life? I saw a couple hands. I know I have. Time and time again, I attempt to be my own savior, which is an attempt to manufacture joy within myself. But what we understand from these words of Jesus and coming back to the design of how we were created, that was never in the cards. Our joy is not something that we create from within us. It's something that comes from an aligning ourselves or a losing of our lives to the one who did create us, to the one who is in charge, to the one who says, "You are loved and you matter and you belong. In your iniquities, in your brokenness, in your pain, in your suffering, you still matter." Sometimes this doesn't jive with us, though, because we so desperately want to control the outcome of our lives. We don't want to go through the pain and suffering. We want to choose our own destination. We want to do everything we can to eliminate the hurt and agony we may face. We try to smooth it over the best we can. This is how people become alcoholics. This is how people become addicts, because we're just trying to cope with the hurt instead of taking our pain and laying it at the feet of Jesus, laying it at the cross, and saying, I cannot do this on my own. This past week, I had the opportunity to go on this trip that we call Destination Unknown. And we take a group of high schoolers every summer, and we choose a different location. We do a bunch of different things. We have a different topic. And the whole premise of the trip is they sign up, and they don't get to know where we're going or what we're doing. I love trying to sell students on this. Like, they ask me, well, where are we going? I can't tell you. Give me money, though, and I'll take you somewhere. Sometimes it works. Sometimes they have a lot more questions, which is okay. But I love that idea. And the idea was actually birthed many years ago. I used to do this kind of a trip at my previous church because me and my friend, as we were kind of thinking about summer camp opportunities and things like that, we kept saying, man, life is so unexpected. We never know what is coming around the corner. I think in January 2020, if you had any inkling that anything was happening, like, I think you might be a liar, because that caught us all off guard. We had no idea. Talk about a destination unknown. Many of us probably felt like, well, if I could have prepared a little bit better, I would have been better mentally, spiritually, and physically prepared for that. But we can never prepare for that. Some of you have dealt with death that you knew was coming. Perhaps you knew someone who was on their deathbed. Even though you may have known it was coming, death is still something that it feels unexpected. We don't know how we're going to fully respond when it does happen. There are no guarantees about what's around the corner. Amen? And so we devised this trip and this idea to be a bit of a test. Can we do that? Can we let go? Can we just say, I don't know where we're going, but I'm going to lean and trust on those who do? Now, I'm not God, right? But we use this to use as a metaphor for students of how we live our very lives. To know that we don't know what's coming, but we have a God who is still with us in the midst of whatever it is we're facing. And so this year we decided we went to Santa Cruz, California, which is up kind of in the Bay Area, right outside San Francisco area. We rented an Airbnb cabin, and we stayed up kind of in the mountains. We were about 15 minutes from the beach. We got to do all these amazing fun things. We went to the boardwalk. We got sunburnt. We did all the things, and it was great. But one of the most significant times that we had as a group every day was our time where we actually dug into some difficult questions. And we decided to spend the week talking about doubt. Because I think that is something that we all hit in our life. For some of us, it might be a daily thing that we hit. But I felt like if there's any year where we should talk about doubt, this is probably it. And so we went through a series of questions of, is it okay to doubt God? Is it, you know, why does God let bad things happen to good people? You know, all of these questions that are just kind of dwelling within students, and to be honest, probably us as adults as well sometimes. But these doubts that rob us of our joy, we focus so heavily on those. And so we decided to kind of embrace those questions firsthand. And so the first night, I'll never forget this because it was just one of those moments as a youth pastor that just was a significant conversation where a student clearly had more questions that got spurred on from the discussion and the dialogue and engaging with one another. And so I opened the invitation the first night. If you have any further questions, or if this is something that you want to talk deeper about, I'd love to talk with you after this or at any point during the week. Any of our leaders are available for you. And sure enough, this student immediately came and grabbed me right after we were done. And the student said, hey, can we go talk? And so we did. We went out on, there was like a little balcony, it was outside, and we just started engaging, and this student began to tell me all of the ways in which they had attempted in their life to create their own joy. They're trying to please all kinds of people. They're trying to do all the things that they're supposed to do. They were chasing after things that were ultimately just bringing more emptiness and longing within them. And the student said to me, "I've never heard anything like what you're talking about. I want to know more about that." And so all throughout the week, the student just kept grabbing me, kept asking more questions, more questions, more questions, more questions, more questions. We ended the trip. I was exhausted. I was so tired. At the end of any youth ministry trip, I'm always asking, did anything we did connect? Did anything connect? You think it does, but then you're kind of left questioning. And sure enough, the night I got home, I had another text from this student who kept asking questions. And all throughout the next couple days, kept asking questions. Until finally, the student made the decision in their life that all that stuff that they had been chasing, all the ways that they had been trying to create their own joy, that wasn't working. And that wasn't the life that they wanted anymore. And told me that they want to commit their life to Jesus, because that's where the student believes that joy can actually be found. Talk about destination unknown. I was not anticipating anything like that after the trip. But God works in his own timing. And we can't force anything to happen. I tell you that because we as a church should be celebrating. If you're looking for joy, it's right there. Jesus is moving and working within the lives of people every single day within our church community. Sometimes it's a matter of how we look at it. What is our perspective? I know during the midst of the pandemic, and we started coming back into the office, I was miserable, right? I shared that with you. I went through this really long spiral downward. And I remember talking with my good friend, Judy, who was volunteering in the office. And she, over the course of the year, she was telling me all kinds of things that were going on in her life. And every Monday or Tuesday, we'd come and we'd talk. And they're always great conversations. But I got a little mad at Judy. Judy kept telling me about all this stuff that was going wrong in her life, primarily her pool. Every time there was a sandstorm, what would happen? Sand would fill up in her pool. And it was almost every week, right? I'm pretty sure Judy's nodding her head, yes. But Judy, as she's telling me this every week, I would be so annoyed. How many of you would just be annoyed if, like, you get your pool cleaned out and then sand just fills it up right back again? And yet every time I talked to Judy, Judy had so much joy on her face, it just made me mad because I couldn't find that. I looked at the way she was living and embracing whatever reality she was hitting, and she was just, no, but, you know, God is good. I remember over and over she kept talking about how good God was. And I was like, Judy, I don't know if you know that, but we're in a pandemic. Like, are you sure? But she was right. My friend Judy can see beyond the circumstances. I'm pretty sure for you in your life, there is something too that it may feel like a hurdle. It may feel like this thing that you're just never going to get around. It may be a feeling within you. It may be a literal obstacle that you see. It may be a person, whatever it may be. We cannot allow that to rob us of the unspeakable, unbelievable, unimaginable joy that comes from aligning ourselves with Christ. Just like our friend did on this destination unknown trip, who realized that old way doesn't work. That he can't create that joy himself. It is something that comes when we lose ourselves and stop trying to please the world and dance with joy like no one, who cares? Just like David. We see Michael watching what David is doing, dancing with joy, and Michael's disgusted. Maybe because Michael can't find the joy. We could bring in another story. We look at the life of Job. Job, who lost everything. Everything. Money, possessions, family. You name it. It was gone. And yet, his joy never subsided. And his friends continually came to him and said, hey, you should really denounce God. Like this is not good. And he refused. Because he understood that what was the most important thing that he could do in his life was be in alignment with God, with the Spirit, with Christ. Brothers and sisters, I don't know what you enter into this space with this morning, what it is you're facing, what the hurdle is, the thing that is keeping you from experiencing the tremendous, unexplainable joy. But I know that that wasn't your design. You were designed to be in relationship with your Creator, who is the source of that joy. And I'm going to bet that there are those of us in here, myself included, who must confess within themselves and to God that I've let that slip. That we've let that go by the wayside. We've allowed the circumstances of whatever it is we're facing overshadow the truth. That no matter the hardship, no matter the struggle, no matter the pain, God is with you. He is present in your life, holding you. And you don't need to do anything or please anyone else. We're called to lose ourselves and align ourselves with Him. And in that, that's where we find that joy. And so if you this morning are that individual, if you were somebody who has maybe allowed that to slip away, I want to invite you this morning to recommit yourself to that alignment. To recommit your life to Christ. To being present with Him in the day in and day out, in the struggles, whatever it is you're facing. That doesn't make the difficulty go away, brothers and sisters. We still live in a broken world. But when we live in that alignment, that's where we truly find fulfillment. Not in doing more or being more or getting that title or whatever it may be. We find our purpose, value, and belonging in the one who created us, who said, you already matter. And that's why we dance with joy. And perhaps you're somebody this morning who maybe you've attended church your entire life, but you've never fully made that commitment. This is an invitation to enter into that truth, just like our friend on Destination Unknown, who realized that old way wasn't working. I want the joy that comes with embracing a life with Christ. Because what I'm doing to fill that hole is not working. It's creating more hurt. And it's just prolonging that pain. I want to dance like David, unashamed. Because we know where our hope rests. This morning is an invitation for each of us in our own way, wherever we are in life. And may you, in the daily activities, struggles, truly experience the unexplainable joy that comes with losing ourselves to Christ, by putting ourselves and all the conventional ideas of what brings happiness to the side, because that is not where the source of joy is. It comes wholeheartedly through Jesus. Thank you.